Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're 15 minutes away from chicken and waffles out here at State Fair. Former County, Baltimore County Executive Don Mohler and my high school guidance counselor, 1982, Don Duck High. Senator Ben Cardin here, and Don, I hogged up segment two.
No, I just know, Senator, those you travel a lot, you get around the world, travel around the United States. Our infrastructure is crumbling. We're not keeping up, mm-hmm. and this is a passion of yours. So can you tell us a little bit, tell our listeners, what you see in terms of infrastructure and what you're trying to do about it?
It's not only a passion, it's a special interest. I'm on the roads between Baltimore and Washington every day, coming and going. And in the morning, a commute that should take a little over an hour takes about 2 hours and 15 minutes. And then coming home, I usually leave late enough that the traffic is not quite as bad. But we live in one of the most congested areas in the country. Baltimore-Washington area, the state of Maryland, is one of the most congested areas in the country. So as a senator from Maryland, I have to be concerned about infrastructure. We need more investment in public transportation. We need more investment in roads and bridges. We need more investment in so many different areas, from the western tip of our state all the way on the eastern shore, and certainly in our urban centers. The challenge is that infrastructure depends a great deal upon the federal partnership. Every 5 or 6 years, traditionally, we have reauthorized the Surface Transportation Act that provides the federal share. You hear the governor announce a lot of roads being built and the local governments announcing a lot of roads being built. Almost every one of those roads or bridges or transit systems include federal funds. If you don't have the federal funds, in some cases, it's the majority of the money is federal funds, you can't do the project.
I don't think most people realize that. So when 43 gets extended in Baltimore right. County, the feds are involved in that, literally.
Yes, you're using a state allocation of funds that include federal funds. So if you're a county exec, you're at the mercy of the federal and state government right. for most of your roads.
No, absolutely. Well, look at what happened in Baltimore City. You had worked so hard yeah. for years on teeing up the funding for the Red Line. Right. It was there, and then with a stroke of the pen, yeah. it was gone.
It took almost a decade to get that project funded as a new start. We got it funded. We had the money in the budget. And then Governor Hogan pulled the plug on the Red Line. That was, to me, very unfortunate. We need transit service here in Baltimore, and we needed to continue that expansion of the programs. If we now find a governor that's willing to go forward on it, it'll probably be a decade before we actually can get the project.
Where are we on the maglev? Because I'm going to, next week, there's some people around here. I saw the Virgin thing on TV. I'm going over to Tokyo. I've ridden on bullet trains in Hong Kong. I've checked my luggage in downtown Hong Kong. I've been at the airport in 15 minutes, 45 miles away. I see what is happening in other places in the world. And I think to myself, living at the Inner Harbor, right. my condo has been on the market 15 months. I live on the 23rd floor overlooking the Inner Harbor. I can't get anybody to walk through my place. And I think to myself, the thing that Baltimore has the best of is location, location, location. We're off of 95. We're between Baltimore, I mean, between Philadelphia and New York, up and down the corridor. Where are we with real transportation in this corridor that's going to make Boston to Richmond a super city, because it already is, and we're all driving on 9. Think about the hours we've all put on right. 95 in our lifetime.
First,
you know?
Let's acknowledge that we do have the MARC service between Baltimore and Washington. It's critically important to commuters between Baltimore and Washington. We have two lines that are very, very valuable, and the service levels are pretty strong. So I just want to acknowledge the MARC service. We're sometimes at the mercy of CSX that has the freight service that competes with passenger service, and that's an issue that we need. It's more politics than it is resources to try to resolve.
Are you working on the Howard Street Tunnel?
Yes, the Howard Street Tunnel is very important to the regional freight traffic, so it would allow double stacking of trains, which is
The standard
for efficient commerce today.
Maybe the way to explain that would be the Harbor Tunnel back in 1975, and when the McHenry right. Tunnel, just a completely yeah. different level of what you can do, right?
It'll make the Port of Baltimore much, much more competitive. Right now, you have to wait to get the cargo moving, the containers moving. This will make a much more efficient operation. The Port of Baltimore is already at a competitive advantage because of location. being inland, but we're at a competitive disadvantage because of the Howard Street Tunnel. So this will be a big boost. We got the money for it. We were able to get the federal share. Now, it's up to the state to move forward on this. They're going to have to use some creativity, and CSX is going to have to pony up. But we got to move this project forward. It's very, very important. So when you asked about rapid rail systems that are being considered, the governor, as I understand, is also considering the Hyperloop system in addition to the maglev system. These are state options that are being reviewed today. And the governor has come to our delegation. He's talked about using the BW Parkway. That has a lot of concern. I mean, there are legal concerns on trying to make the BW Parkway expand. It's a national park. It's under a national park system. So it's controlled by the national parks. And the law requires that they maintain the integrity of the BW Parkway. Well, if you expand the number of lanes, I'm not sure that can be accomplished. So there are different options that the state is looking at. And we expect Governor Hogan to come in with a strategy on how to deal with the congestion. There are three or four major routes between Baltimore and Washington. I've tried every one of them. Different days, several are not the right way, and some days all are not the right way. But you have to suffer
through
the
consequences. Thank God we have Google Maps now. Yeah. You can see where the red is. I mean, 20 years ago, it was like going to the Capitol Center. All right, which way are we
going? It drives me crazy because we'll go from one route to the other route, back to the same route. At times, Google can only tell you where you are at that particular moment. So
we were fortunate enough to have Senator Mikulski very early on, before we even knew what we were doing at Baltimore Positive. She was kind enough to spend some time. And these conversations meander, and you gave your staff a hard time. I didn't get any of the questions. She didn't get any questions either, right?
I know you were kidding. Yeah.
But part of it was these things meander into these conversations. She explained to us how the Fort McHenry Tunnel got built. And as somebody from Eastwood, is one of your seeing that road go through when I was a boy and understanding how many times I've used that thing and what it means when that kind of a project gets done. I was up in P.E. Island up in Canada 15 years ago, and they had ferries, and they built a bridge, and the richest guy in the entire province built the bridge, and it's $50 to cross the bridge, and I refused to pay it. But it would have been $50 to take the ferry, but I just didn't want to pay for the bridge. People don't like paying for infrastructure, dude.
Well,
they don't like tolls.
You asked the question about infrastructure to start off with. That's going to be the key question. The key question is how we're going to pay for it, because the gasoline per gallon tax is not adequate to pay for the transportation needs of today. That's you could get almost 100% agreement among members of Congress that their current revenues are not adequate. Our committee, the Environment and Public Works Committee, I'm the ranking Democrat on infrastructure, we approved an infrastructure bill unanimously. Every member voted for it, which is substantially higher than the amount of money we're spending today. We would all acknowledge the current revenues are inadequate to pay for that. So therefore, we have to look at new revenues. So one of the revenues that are being considered, get your view on it. You put a little.
I'm a citizen.
You put a little monitor on your fender, and we charge you on the mileage used. You like it? Don't like it?
The more you use, the more you pay. Right. I mean, that's kind of that's a syntax, right? That's a usage.
No, it's not a syntax. It's a user fee, because the more you're on the roads, the more you benefit from the roads, and the more that the maintenance of the roads are going to be required. So this is
the
not
the more you're sinning. You're beating up the roads, so therefore,
it might reflect the fact that a senior citizen would be charged less. A retired senior citizen would be charged. Depends on how they get around, right.
Because obviously they may be using public transportation. They may be someone else might be driving them. So it's one of the options that's under consideration. There's another option: should we have a per barrel oil tax rather, or supplementing a per gallon gasoline tax? Because today a lot of the oil that we use does not go directly into a taxable fuel, and yet businesses and et cetera use the road systems, part of our commerce. That provides some additional revenue.
I have to laugh because I get off the plane in California. It's always $4 a gallon. Doesn't matter what the gas is here. And they're always like, oh, it went down. It's only $3.89. I'm like, what? But in other states, you feel that, right? Like when you walk up to the, you know, you do get off a plane in San Diego and see what they charge for gas, right?
But there is agreement. What you said, though, was there is agreement among members of Congress that we need to do something about infrastructure.
Yes.
We start there. That's a positive.
I think it's almost unanimous.
Almost unanimous. So we have something to build on.
But then people have to pay for it.
I know the senator has another.
And I would tell you most members agree that we're going to have to pay for it, and we're going to have to do something about that. It breaks down on the specifics.
Sure. Always does. Real quick, the lightning round. I know you have to run. You've got another appointment. Lightning round of a couple of key issues that always come up here. Guns.
Well,
are we on guns?
This should be a no-brainer for the Congress. A sensible gun safety legislation should have passed many years ago. Why we don't have a universal background check is beyond me. The public fully supports it over 90%. It will reduce the amount of gun violence. We must acknowledge that the United States is an outlier among the developed nations of the world. We have 10, 20, 30 times the violence with guns that the other industrial nations have, whether it's mass killings, whether it's gun violence on our streets, whether it's suicide. We are outliers. And one of the reasons is that we allow people to have guns who shouldn't have guns. All they have to do is go on the internet for a sale. We didn't have the internet sales when we passed the original background checks. We need to modernize that. The second thing, which I think is also should have been done a long time ago, we had once before outlawed military-style weapons, and it worked. Law enforcement will tell you they're safer and our communities are safer if we don't have private ownership of assault-type weapons. We need to go back to those days to eliminate that type of weapon. And there's now, as you know, magazines that hold multiple rounds. There's now different types of devices that are used to cause mass damage. That needs to be eliminated in private ownership.
Well, Senator, I have to pick up on that because and I'm sure these conversations took place around the region. This past week, a disturbed individual out in the Hunt Valley Town Center injured 5 people with a knife.
In an area we've all walked through.
In an area that we all know well. My wife's initial comment was, I want to ask people who think that you should be able to walk down the street with an assault weapon, what would have happened that day at Hunt Valley had that disturbed individual had an assault weapon?
That's a good point.
We know the answer. It's silly. Healthcare. You a Medicare for All guy or are you an improved Obamacare guy?
I'm for building on the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act to me was the right balance for our country. It had gaps in it, particularly those who can't afford the individual marketplace, doesn't have anyone helping them pay for their insurance premiums. The cost of prescription drugs need to be dealt with. They're out of control in this country. We overpay on prescription drugs. There are things that we can do to build on the Affordable Care Act, including a public option, which does not deny you the option to pick whatever other company you want to be insured by, but adds additional coverage and competition in our system.
What can we do about the cost of prescription drugs? I mean, it's insane. I mean, Nestor's wife is a diabetic. You look that insulin, same doses of insulin that costs $300 here, costs $30 in Canada. What can we do?
Improve competition. Use the old-fashioned competition model. When we passed the Medicare Part D law, which is the prescription drug law, the Republicans put in this, something that I opposed, a prohibition from negotiating collectively price. So think about it this way. Say you own 5 grocery stores, and you're told by law that you only can negotiate each grocery store's amount of produce that you buy. You can't use the collective bargaining power of all 5 stores. You would say, that's crazy. But that's what we've done in Medicare. We've said that the government can only negotiate each individual market. They can't do the entire country. That's ridiculous. So if we open up competition, we would dramatically reduce the cost. There's another problem, though, and that is why we have drug shortages in this country. It makes no sense at all. Common drugs you can't get. They're critically important. Newborn baby is born, needs drops in his or her eyes. That wasn't available. That should not be allowed to exist with an industry that's making really good profits in this country. They must have the responsibility to provide necessary drugs that are needed.
Creating a false shortage, sort of?
It's not a false shortage. What they're doing is they're not making enough money on that drug, so they use their capacity for a higher return. That can't be allowed to exist in an industry that's making really good returns.
We have a lot we could talk about. One last, we can't have you on without mentioning immigration. Just talk about our nation's immigration policy, what you've seen, what you're fighting for, what it ought to be.
Right. I already talked about values right. of this country. The values of this country were built upon allowing people who are persecuted to come to this country. My grandparents came here to escape persecution, and now I serve in the United States Senate. We have to have an orderly way for people coming into America. We need to know who's coming into this country. We have to have border security. People have to come in an orderly way. We need to be able to vet them to make sure they're not here to cause harm. That's absolutely essential. That's the first step. But we have to have an immigration system that allows those that are being persecuted to be able to seek asylum here in America in an orderly way that's safe for them and their children, not the way President Trump is doing it by putting them in cages or requiring them to stay in unsafe circumstances in other countries. That needs to end. We also have to have a way to deal with those that are here long-term, the Dreamers, those that are on temporary protective status, so that they can have a way towards citizenship here in the United States. And we need to deal with an orderly way for the labor force, where we need people to help. Talk to the people on the Eastern Shore, on the seafood industry, or Ocean City, on tourism. We have to have an orderly way that they can have their workers come into this country.
You got to get to Morgan State.
You got to go. Senator, thanks for all you're doing.
My pleasure.
Keep
Done.
Up the good fight.
Hey, look,
come back.
I don't need the Dos Equis guy anymore. I got you. The most interesting man in the world right here.
We hope to come back.
Senator Ben Cardin joining us here. We're at State Fair in Kanesville. Baltimore Positive rolling on next week. I believe it's Bill Ferguson, isn't it?
I think it is.
I think it is.